Arizona Governor Doug Ducey is suspending Uber's testing of self-driving cars in that state. That's after one of Uber's autonomous vehicles killed a pedestrian in Tempe earlier this month. In a letter to the company yesterday, Ducey called the crash a, quote, unquestionable failure to prioritize public safety. Now, Uber had already suspended its tests in the country and said it's cooperating with investigators. Robin Farzad hosts Full Disclosure on NPR One, and he's here now with more. Hi there, Robin.
Magda, how are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, this was a really big setback for autonomous vehicle testing. And Uber had actually been welcomed by Arizona before this with open arms. So, I mean, how much is this going to really affect the progress of self-driving cars on American roads?
I think it's both a setback for self-driving cars and especially Uber, which is coming out of this year of volatility and management turnover and right-sizing the business. Look, there's this race across industries for the holy grail of reliable and scalable self-driving rides. So there's Google, you'd mentioned Tesla, other players like Jaguar and venture capital funds. So if you become the butt of late night comedians at this point, it's a lot to overcome.
Yeah. And so at Google, but Uber had autonomous vehicles as a key part of its long-term strategy, to battle back all that instability you were talking about. So in terms of Uber's long-term prospects, problems there?
Yeah, it is, because if you get a couple of beers into these guys, they don't want to count on drivers forever. Drivers are a part of the cost basis, the volatility. They've had terrible HR headlines with some bad characters. I mean, you love your drivers, but you want to put them out of work sooner rather than later.
Yeah. So Uber's been having other problems internationally as well, because the company announced on Sunday that it's going to sell its ride-hailing and food delivery business in Southeast Asia. So what's happening there?
Developing markets especially, I mean, they have such decentralized logistics, not just people moonlighting as cut-rate cabbies, but cheap and lightly regulated minibuses and motorbikes. And you have to pry the fares from these people's cold, dead hands. Great, you have an app and you show up, but can you undercut them? Very doubtful.
Right. So it's already left China and Russia, and it's selling its business in Southeast Asia to Grab that already has a shuttle service in Singapore. I mean, so if I understand this correctly, you can use Grab to hail a motorbike in Jakarta. I mean, is this part of the issue? Is that a lot of forms of transportation that are popular in Southeast Asia aren't the ones that Uber's been focusing on?
And not just that, but cash. You take for granted the fact that you can just be an app company and asset light and, deal with credit cards. But a lot of these teeming metropolises, they still show an aversion to credit cards. So if you want to be a ride-sharing app, say in India, you also need to facilitate payments. You need to be the complete package. And if you're Uber looking at it like, well, it's not working out for me here, maybe I'm going to focus elsewhere.
Right. So there's a whole culture and system of behavior around ride-hailing, which maybe hasn't yet arrived in these countries. But are there other places in which Uber might be doubling down on? I see that they've launched something new in India recently.
Yeah, India. I mean, look, management for its part is saying it cannot and will not leave India. It's too big a market. But I'm not so sure, at least, that Uber can keep going it alone. Might need a partner there. Latin America and the Middle East still offer lots of potential market share. But again, you have to fend off cheaper local upstarts. And still, you have to give these drivers an appealing cut.
Wow. The idea of hailing a rickshaw through Uber in Mumbai, it's kind of an incredible idea. Robin Farzad hosts Full Disclosure on NPR One. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Magda.